Heather, thank you so much for joining today on Research and Beyond. And first of all, I would want to congratulate you on being the president-elect at SSP, which we call the Society for Scholarly Publishing. Congratulations. Speaking of consistent usage, reporting, and AI in publishing, moving our shift over there, you've served at the board of Counter, which promotes consistent usage reporting. Can we speak a little more in terms of the importance of standardization for the industry? Because as far as I have known the industry, for the little experience that I have, it's come to my notice that people and researchers especially are wanting to have a standardized or a universal policy for everything. Now, especially with AI coming into picture, every journal, every institution has a different set of rules or guidelines that they have set, where researchers are often confused. What should they follow? If they follow a certain thing for a particular journal, it's not accepted by the other journal, or it's not universally accepted. There are certain, especially even when I speak about authorship issues, right? I remember there was one article in Nature that was published where one of the authors was ChatGPT, and that is astonishing and kind of threatening to scientific integrity as well. So how do you, what do you feel about, having a standardized, a standardized rule and a standardized notion around the industry when it especially comes to consistent usage and AI integration?
Yeah, so I think a couple of topics, in this question. I'll start with the Counter side, and it's been an organization, very close to my heart even before I was on the board there, and I'm currently on the executive committee. I think, in the early days, libraries really pushed publishers to become publishers and other resources to become Counter compliant because they had no way to really get a apples to apples, or comparison between resources they were spending on and whether the return on investment in those resources was a good one, or not. I would think that Counter, having been around for quite some years now, that this would be no longer a challenge, but I'm hearing from librarians as recently as the last couple of weeks that not every provider is making Counter usage available to them. They also, because they're pulled in so many directions on the library staff, have fewer folks who can actually look into, usage statistics. And so maybe there might be a way for publishers to provide those reports or generate, some highlights from those reports so that the libraries in there with their reduced staffing and their reduced time can get the most important details out of that. With the move to OA, it's been a different situation. Most of the pure play OA publishers didn't need to worry about usage statistics because they didn't have a direct relationship with a library. And because the library wasn't paying for that directly, I mean, of course, they're paying APCs, there wasn't necessarily a pressure for those open access publishers to become Counter compliant. There's also, of course, challenges because if there's no authentication required on the platform, you might not know where someone is coming from. So Counter has been doing some work to make sure that global access can be considered in terms of impact. So I think that that is developing nicely on campus and in publishing. I think we're in such early days of these large language models and the generative AI. And there's new developments, almost every day. And I tend to counsel people, don't try to take it all in because it's changing so quickly. Recognize that certain things are going to rise and certain things are going to fall. I mean, just as a minor point, what we think of as OA is constantly changing. When we came out with GPS that we used to use, only in our car, and now we use on our phone, that was like, wow, what a great, AI solution to maps. And now that we're used to it, we don't think of it as AI anymore. There are a lot of tools that service providers have been using to sort content by the level of editing it might need, or plagiarism checks and things that are automated. And thinking of something as automated rather than artificial intelligence can help us maybe think about, a priority or a context, to kind of put it in. There's so many new startups in the space, and it's not clear, since I come from the startup space, I keep an eye on this. It's not always clear what their business models are going to be. So when I counsel companies who come to me at DeltaThink about how to make these decisions, take a look at contracts, what will happen. Will you spend a lot of time investing, and if this company doesn't have a business model, what, will your time be lost, or maybe that tool will be acquired by a larger company? We're seeing a lot of service providers acquiring AI tools, publishers acquiring AI tools and services. What will happen, to your integration, in that circumstance? Research integrity is a big area that both the universities and the publishers are looking at now. So we can run a lot of technical checks to look for, language that could indicate, that AI may be involved and maybe the papers come from a paper mill. We can look at different kinds of plagiarism checks that could indicate whether, something is coming from a large language model. We can look at, is the author a real person, or are there certain activities like author swapping and things like that that are happening that could indicate an issue? But of course, the bad actors have access to tools as well. So at the end of the day, we're going to always need humans. To stay in the loop. We do work at DeltaThink with publishers who are trying to come up with policies. And you said it, researchers struggle with the fact that policies are different in so many cases. And really there's no one size fits all policy. It's going to depend on the subject area, that you're working in. What are the, certain jobs, that authors are doing, AI in the medical context, looking for images for treatment plans or something would be quite different from AI in other contexts. I think the important thing is that we have transparency and understanding in how AI is being used. Is it used mainly for improving the flow of language? Is it used partly in research and how that is happening? We want to make sure that any of the tool use that might have inherent bias, is disclosed so that that can be looked at. This is going to generate, a whole different future, set of standards around these things. But I do think, and this may be a little bit controversial, that in certain contexts in the future, there may be AI that gets credited for authorship. Right now, you cannot copyright or trademark an AI generated item. So, there's a lot of discussion around that. But in the same way that, new discoveries, might be made, I do think that there could potentially come a context in the future where, AI is not a lead author, but, is given, some sort of a credit for a role or a part of a discovery. I won't be surprised if that happens.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with you, Heather, on that part, because we do not know, like, the buzz around AI is not going to die any sooner. And I think it's just going to increase the resonance. The effect is just going to increase and, kind of spread across the world. And especially when you talk about research integrity in lines of using AI, image manipulation and data manipulation is also one of the main concerns when researchers use AI as part of their, just to support probably their findings or the way that they write a research paper probably. But then that is also one of the major threats that we need to consider. And for that reason, it is also necessary that we ensure that human expertise, as you mentioned, humans, you cannot oversee the fact that humans are supposed to put in their expertise and make sure that they ensure the way that research is reported, the research is published, and then finally disseminated to readers. Because in the end, every research is going to have a certain societal impact, and that societal impact should not be in a negative side for sure. And the way we report things, the way we publish them, that is how it is going to make a lot of it is going to create a lot of waves in the industry at the moment, because as you clearly mentioned, LLMs is at a very initial stage at the moment, and we still have a lot to go there. And in that sense, the businesses or the AI developers, the companies that develop AI, need to be a little more transparent in terms of how they use data, in terms of how they are processing certain data, if they are receiving it from any of the sources. If I am trusting an AI tool with my data, which probably is not published anywhere, I need to be sure of how that data is going to be secure. The privacy rules and all of these things probably need to be very clearly stated by the AI developers as well, right?
Absolutely. And again, as you say, it's really early days for this. And I see, a number of companies thinking about, using LLM, creating LLMs based on their own peer-reviewed data. That's or content. I think that's very exciting. I think more and more subject areas requiring data deposit for reproducibility, for replicability. That's going to be really critical. I think that I don't see humans, being put in danger here. I don't think that AI peer reviewers are going to replace human reviewers, but I do think that there could be some things that are done with articles and data before the peer reviewer gets them, so that they have some guidance, and then they can use their subject area expertise, in the best way. They're not trying to, copy edit the article, or something like that. And I think that just as we talked about the roles in libraries changing, the roles in publishers and service providers, are going to change, and I think become less boring, less rote. I'm not a person who loves a good spreadsheet. There's some people that's the best part of their day, to get up and look at a spreadsheet. So more power to them. But some of the things that took a long time to do that will, be accomplished more quickly will open up for more, creative and focused endeavors, and lead to careers that, we haven't even seen yet in the so that's going to be exciting to watch as well.
Yes, definitely. And like you rightly said, that we don't see humans being replaced by AI anytime soon, or especially in the scholarly publishing dynamic. Let's put it let's be realistic here. And so that's when the whole concept of hybrid intelligence comes into picture, where you are going, like humans and AI is going to walk hand in hand when it comes to delivering certain outputs in the science communications domain, let's say. So when we speak about creating content or writing papers and having to publish, and while maintaining the integrity and the sanctity of scientific queries, how do you think can we strike a healthy balance in this domain?
Yeah, I think one the key word in that sentence is really healthy balance, and we could actually question whether we have a healthy balance now when it comes to research assessment, for example. The push and push and push to publish more and more papers in specific journals, and across different professions, has created some of the technology issues that we have now on research integrity with paper mills and the like, which of course existed before we had, automated, paper mills. I think a better look at that, on the research assessment end could, let some steam off, let some of the pressure off, in areas where you have doctors, for example, and maybe they're not in a research specialty, but in order to get a promotion, they're required to have some papers published, and so that creates a potential for them, to want to, take an AI shortcut. The other side of that coin could be that they're, researchers want to do research, and like that's their thing at the end of the day. They don't want necessarily to publish. Some of them might, but generally they want to do their research, and it might be that writing up the results from some experiments could readily, be done by AI, and that would become, generally accepted. Oh, the methods section gets written and then checked or something like that. So I think that we could use it for some, positive and good, requirements, across those fields. Yeah, again, I think a lot of stuff that we're thinking about now, we just don't know yet. What's going to be happening. I think that AI in the early research elements in terms of discovery is going to do a great job in finding authors what they need. I am very excited to hearing about plain language summaries that are being created. And I would live for a day when I could like say, show me all of the plain language summaries across all the publishers, and having an AI, research assistant that would be able to know the difference between me searching for Apple Computer versus the Apple the Fruit, or Apple the Record Label, and the benefits that are going to come, in the research and discovery stage. That will lead to greater, productivity, down the line. I think one of the areas we're really focused on right now is this good growth of retractions. I do work in, some, initiatives around this. As part of my role at DeltaThink, I work with the International STM Association on an initiative called GetFTR. And one of the things that's being added, as we speak, is in addition to letting researchers know that they have access to content because it's open or free, or because their institution has a subscription, we're going to start pulling in Crossref information and Retraction Watch information to show them right at the level before they've even clicked through to the content that this has an update or this has a retraction. And those kinds of retraction notices are going to be provided, across the web, because no one wants a researcher to unknowingly use something that's been retracted, or where there was even, an indication of concern on the part of the publisher. So I think protecting using that type of, AI matching around author title or, matching through a DOI is going to help filter out some of that misconduct at the earliest possible stage, so that it doesn't, go on to sort of contaminate the scientific record.
Absolutely, Heather, and I completely agree. And I think in 2023 there were around 10,000 plus retractions or overall, and that's very concerning. And for us, for people who are science communicators, it becomes absolutely necessary to ensure that research misconduct is not being spread to a large extent. Moving on to your experience as an advisor to many organizations over the past years, how do you see a successful collaboration between different stakeholders in this ecosystem while they are wanting to maintain research integrity as well as ensuring that the right dissemination of scientific findings happens?
Yeah, I think open communication, is a good foundation. Making sure that all sides and all stakeholder concerns, are heard. So it's like we're kind of taking, DEIA in a smaller, like a committee context or a group context or a work context, and then like expanding it, to incorporate the whole ecosystem, which of course adds, complexity. We find, at DeltaThink, that an iterative approach is best, sort of checking in frequently, slightly adjusting goals, making sure everyone's on the same page, is the best way, to kind of move forward, generating, the best efforts from everyone that is involved, prioritizing, and communicating. We do a lot of workshops for companies who may be looking for additional revenue streams or looking for additional business models now that content, might not be the only way forward for them. And bringing in the stakeholders early on so they don't feel like that it's a just a top-down dictate to them. But getting, and generating and getting their ideas, incorporating those, as you move forward, really is the best way to go as far as that. And I think it's, you know, it works on a company level, whether you're talking about different divisions, it works in an ecosystem level, you know, with many stakeholders. You know, organizations like SSP are great because they bring together publishers and vendors, maybe less, fewer librarians, you know, on this SSP front. I think where we struggle as an industry is we don't have as much access to researchers as we would like to have and as we could. So I'd love to find a way, you know, to make that happen, because, you know, at the end of the day, a lot of the things that are created and published and provided tools and functionality and features are for the researchers. And while librarians are great to try to communicate back to us what they need, it's not as good, you know, as direct communication, obviously.
Yes, absolutely. And what one advice would you want to give to all the stakeholders of the scholarly communication field when it comes to, you know, adapting to these changing times of digital era? Just one advice if you would want to give them.
I, you know, be optimistic. You know, do not dismay. You can't always see the outcome of the change when you're in it. But it is moving, you know, apace. I mean, think about the early print to digital, you know, revolution. There weren't very many standards in place. There was a woman who worked at our company who had to send out 30 different versions of every book that we published because every ebook platform used a different standard. You know, smart people came along, you know, EPUB was developed, good metadata standards, you know, were developed. Organizations like Crossref, you know, provided linking, great discovery tools, author identifiers, organizational identifiers, all of those things were coming, but I couldn't have faulted her for thinking, you know, oh my gosh, it's bad and it's only going to get worse. So know that smart minds are out there and they're going to be working on these tough problems. And, you know, I'm confident we're going to come through stronger on the other side.
Absolutely, very rightly said so. And a very strong note or a message that I get out of this entire conversation is that you need to be optimistic of the change, embrace the change as it comes to you. And while you're doing all of these things, ensure that you are doing everything in ethical practices in the right possible way that you can. And finally, the last question that I would want to ask you today is, what legacy do you hope to leave behind in the scholarly publishing industry through your work with SSP and other organizations as well?
Yeah, I think we're none of us are getting rich in scholarly publishing. We don't do it for the money. We do it because we believe in the positive outcomes, as you say, of what we're doing. We strive to meet ethical standards that the bar gets higher, you know, all of the time. So the work is never done. You know, we're working on, you know, inclusivity and diversity of perspective. And that work, you know, will never be done. But look around you at the people that you're working with in your team, in your department, in your company, in the companies that you work with, through the libraries you communicate to, on to authors. It's like, you know, greater growing circles. Meet as many people as you can, because you will learn more about what's going on and what amazing people go into the field. Mentor others and ask for mentors yourself. We tend to be an organization, an industry that's very generous with their time, and I learn as much from my mentees as I could ever hope to impart to them. Volunteer through committees or boards, because you will get an insider perspective, which makes the meetings that much more interesting, and the outputs of those organizations, you know, that much more fulfilling. And so, keep your focus on the people. They will get you through. We are an industry that does tend to have a lot of turnover. Companies grow and shift. I myself have lost my position at companies 3 times. It's never fun. It hurts every time, but I now make sure that I help others who are in that situation. And the more people that you know, the more people you will have to help you be resilient, regardless of the direction that your career path takes.
Thank you so much. That was very insightful and one of the most inspiring conversations I've ever had. Thank you so much for your time, Heather. Again, what you mentioned toward the end is You need to be positive. You need to be optimistic with whatever comes your way. And yes, we are definitely not getting rich, but we are getting rich in the ter in terms of the literature that we produce as part of scholarly communications, which is making scientific inquiry more robust as the times change. So that's what we can aim for and hope that our ethical standards are at par as times grow and the number of retractions are reduced, especially that happened due to misconduct.
Well, thank you for having me here today. I've really enjoyed the conversation.